This is Life I Swear, where we share stories and reflections from Black women about trials in their lives that have helped them heal, connect, and process. Every week, we hold space for storytelling that both challenges and inspires us to be good to ourselves. I'm your host, Chloe Dulce Luvueso. Hi, loves. So this is the last episode of the season where I'll be joined by a guest, and I am so full from it. I'll have more reflections next week as I close out the season from the holidays, but I am looking forward to letting everything that was shared this fall marinate into the new year. And lastly, but definitely not least, this week I am joined by Jazz Moon. And Jazz, well, she is an Aquarian entrepreneur and champions others to be too, to embed practices that support the holistic well-being of themselves and their customers into their mission-driven businesses. She'll explain more for herself. And in this episode, we talk many things under the sun of being true to ourselves in the midst of uncertainty, ambition versus aspiration, and my favorite, creating home when the notion itself is abstract as a nomad and creative.
Who is Jazz Moon?
As I'm currently, I feel like I'm going through a deep shedding and also a deep rest cycle. I feel like this is the one season or the one time in my life that I'm honoring a winter season. And with that, there's so many shedding of identities that I thought I had to hold on to in order to even say it's me, Jazz. And I don't know, that comes with some comfort, also some grief, also some sadness. I feel like you caught me at a very raw time. Maybe if it was 2 weeks ahead or 2 weeks behind, maybe been in a different spirit. I don't know if you experience this crossover between like young adult to adulthood, like proper adulthood. I feel like that's what's happening right now.
And I will also inject here, you're a whole mother.
Yeah. Yes. And even that, like, it doesn't sink in that you're an adult just because you're a mother. It doesn't, I don't know, something about it doesn't click fully until you go on your own personal journey, whatever your life is. I'm also just realizing so much compassion for my own parents and for my own mom. She was the same age that I am right now, but she had 4 kids and I have 2 kids. And I can't even imagine trying to understand myself, heal from my childhood traumas, try to be a present, you know, kind and loving, compassionate being to my coworkers and to my neighbors and to my kids and to all these different things. Like, it's hard for me. So I'm just, like I said, I feel like I'm in a very tender, like, forgiving, compassionate place, which is not who I would have ever described myself as before.
Wow.
I very much grew up, I'm the oldest of 4 kids. Both of my parents are Nigerian. I'm first generation American. So there was no like softness. There was no, I love you. There wasn't any of that. It was like, we're surviving and we're doing the best that we can and everyone has to help out. And so it almost feels like that part of myself was never really nurtured, and almost ironic that as I'm moving into proper adulthood is when this childlike compassion and grace and forgiveness, understanding is really coming through. So I'm like, in a way, kind of recalibrating in my own physical body, in my spiritual body, in my heart, in my mind. It's nice to know that maybe this person has always been there. Also kind of scary getting to know a new part of yourself that was maybe hidden because of so many different reasons, you know?
I do know.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's a shedding season for sure.
I love it. I appreciate all of this this kind of backdrop to who you are. And as I learned about your work through my Insta stalking and my website and my newsletter subscription, I'm always curious as to like who is the person that had led mm-hmm. that has led herself into the life that you live in your in Bali now. You're mm-hmm. an American woman in Bali. Mm-hmm. Children that now have this very multi-dimensional, intersectional, global citizen, third mm-hmm. culture kid. Mm-hmm. And that's one that I relate to as well. I don't think I shared this with you, but I'm half Congolese, mm-hmm. half a white American, but I grew up in Niger, which was like your kids, also not home of neither one of my parents. So yeah, I'm always curious of the backstory of the person mm-hmm. who led to this fascinating and humanly divine life.
Yeah, it has been quite a journey. It's so interesting because even though I live in Bali currently, and I've been living here with my husband and my kids for 2 years now, as soon as my husband and I got married, we moved to Thailand about a month after our wedding, and then moved back to the States to have our kids, and then moved out of the States when we have our kids. And so we've kind of been doing this weird shuffle dance between cultures. And to be honest, I've never really understood why I had or have a pull to live in other places. I mean, I've lived in Nigeria. I've lived in so many different places around the world. And it always feels like I'm seeking home, some sort of like just that feeling, you know, that you get when you have arrived at a place and it's just, can just take a deep breath and it's home. And I don't actually feel like I found that yet. I don't know if I ever will.
Yeah.
I do feel like the seeking has slowed down just through my own healing. But there is always a part of me that's like, I wonder if I will ever just find that home. Yes, yeah. Home is inside of you. Yes, I know all those things, but still like a physic, like the physicality of being on earth, you know?
Yeah. No, I feel like that's been my journey my whole life as well. I've lived in so many places, and I'm in DC now, and I have my son, and I'm partnered and engaged, and I never saw myself living a stable life, but I say that in the best of ways. Like I am all, like my heart is an explorer and a discoverer. Mm-hmm. Like you, home has not been ever clear to me. And even though I find myself keep returning to DC, it's hard to say I'm from DC. And I don't know that any place would satisfy mm-hmm. people as a physical totality. Like, so this is where I lay my head. And it's where I'm raising my son, and he has a completely different experience than I did. But I think where I have felt myself still exercising this like nomadic spirit is in my creativity and entrepreneurialism, in my storytelling. I want to know like the stories of the people, the Nigerians who live in Bali, and the you know, and the Indonesians who live in South America. Like I want to follow that. And so I think, yeah, my nomadic spirit lives in my creativity. The things I try out in terms of like business and what I'm capable of and how I expand myself, I think all of those are extensions of looking for home, because it's for expression, mm-hmm. or safe spaces to express and to just be. I feel like that resonates with you.
Yeah.
The season that you're in this like recalibrating and shedding, I recently listened to your last, we're going to cross promote podcast here because anyone hasn't listened to Humanly Divine, please do. And I'm just curious, outside of your journey in home, in a physical setting, when you think about your entrepreneurship, you as a creative, how has that shown up for you? And what the heck is an Aquarian entrepreneur?
First of all, I resonate so hard with that. I think you know, we have some like similar attributes in our charts, that seeking and that resonance with finding home in your creativity and in your unique expression. I think that's one of the safest places that we can actually find our security without needing another person, which is amazing. I'm so blessed to experience that because it wasn't always like that. And in terms of entrepreneurship, you know, my mom is a hustler, and you have to be a hustler if you, you know, are immigrating to America. She's well educated, but she had 4 kids. And when you are a single parent with 4 kids, you have to figure out how to make ends meet constantly. And she was always working 2, 3, 4 jobs at a time. And so I really only ever knew entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't really, even when I met my husband, you know, he's corporate all the way. He's from Michigan, mm-hmm. you know, went to a Bible Belt school and, you know, was very much raised to, you get a good degree, you get a good job, you work until your retirement, you get your 401k and you kind of retire. I didn't even really know what any of that stuff was. I just knew, you know, when the bills are due, my mom goes out and she comes back with groceries. Like it just, there was never this sense of like, oh yeah, this is exactly how it works. Later on in life, she started to climb up the corporate ladder, but she always instilled in us that entrepreneurial spirit to go after mm-hmm. what it is that you want. Back then, I didn't know anything about human design. So I definitely wouldn't take that advice now. But it still laid such a firm foundation in me to try new things and to be unafraid of failure, because that's what entrepreneurship is. It's just you have a high tolerance. Some people have a high tolerance for pain. As an entrepreneur, you have to have a high tolerance for failure. And if you don't have that, it will eat you alive in every direction. Your relationships, your friendships, your body, your stress, your mind, your soul, your spirit, everything. And that's one of the biggest things that I learned from her, because she failed a lot. She failed a lot. And, you know, she was risking her family every single time she would try something and it didn't work out. And then finally she struck gold and, you know, she became a millionaire. And it was one of these things where I'm just like, oh, okay. After that 51st try,
yeah.
You know, after going through all that, you know, trauma and suffering as a kid of not, you know, kind of having what my friends had. And then suddenly to be in my teenage years and have more than what they could ever imagine and wish for. So that was one of the gifts that she really gave me. And honestly, I always tell my husband, like, I am unemployable. Like I cannot work mm-hmm. for anyone, not because I don't want to, but because there isn't any job that can hold all of the multidimensionality that I possess because of all the things that I've done in my life. And the past 3 years, I was studying human design. Well, I've been studying human design for about 5 years on my own. And then the past 3 years, I decided to make a business of human design and sharing human design with other people, specifically in supporting them with their purpose and their careers and their jobs. And I remember we were actually homeless with our 2 kids. Mm. Alex had lost his job. And, you know, every month the money was just going down and down and down. And then we finally ended up moving in with my mom. But my mom then, through life circumstances, lost her place. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, through us kind of just moving and bumping around from family to family, we ended up back in Michigan at my husband's brother's kind of house that he had fixed up in Detroit. And I remember Alex was working construction, okay, and he has a degree in business and finance and mergers and acquisitions, and he couldn't find a job and he's working in construction. And, you know, we're chopping wood for our fire. I don't know if anyone's ever been to Detroit, but it's mm-hmm. it was once a beautiful place and it still is, but it's very much desolate. And yeah. There's a lot of spaces between the homes and it almost feels like you're living kind of on a farm. You know, you have to, sometimes there's not a lot of these modern day preferences.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of having to make do. And I remember I started sharing some human design things online, and I remember someone with a larger account than I had at the time shared one of my posts, and I woke up the next day and my DMs were flooded with people just, you know, wanting a reading or wanting to talk to me, and I was just like, oh my God, this is insane. long story short, I met this girl and she said, you know, you could make a lot of money doing this. And I was like, oh, really? Like just this thing that I'm studying on the side. And I think when I made like my first $500 doing it, I told Alex, I was like, you need to come home and watch the kids because I'm making more money than what's going on in construction. And that literally started the 3-year journey of our business, which I just closed down due to severe burnout, which we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, scaling that business to $500,000 and then just being like, my body just shut down. I was like,
wow.
I literally can't, I physically can't get up anymore. Like I'm having severe pains in my stomach and my body. I've gone to almost every doctor here on the island to get tested for everything you could ever imagine. And they literally don't know what's wrong. Just, I'm burnt out. I'm stressed. I'm burnt out. And I just can't handle the sheer load and volume of everything. So it's been kind of a blessing in disguise to pivot, to redirect my energy, to say, wow, that was a great run. I really had a lot of fun doing that, but I don't think that this is going to be my long-term thing. And I'm just craving a more sustainable life.
Like, yeah.
It's just not sustainable. It's just working like that is just not how we were designed to work. We were designed to work in tandem with the rhythm and the seasons of the environment that we inhabit. And a lot of us live in cities and we don't even get to breathe in that type of rhythm, let alone access it in our day-to-day lives. And that's actually what the Aquarian Entrepreneur stands for. Aquarius is this contrarian energy in astrology, and it rules the collective energy. It rules communes and being together and just the land and our wishes and our dreams, but really sharing it with people, not just for ourselves. And it kind of came to me one day, because I was like, I wonder what it would be like if everyone all rested in Q4, if all businesses shut down and they were able to live off of the harvest from Q3. Because the thing is, businesses can do that, but choose not to because of sheer greed. And greed is this incessant virus that can never really heal. Like you never can feed greed enough. And because of that, we have so many things going on in our communities, our societies, our countries, the collective and the world. And it's so interesting to me to see so many intelligent, smart, powerful people relentlessly fighting for climate change. And to me, I just feel like the earth can heal herself. She doesn't need us to fight for her. She needs us to heal ourselves so that she can heal. She's just mirroring what's happening in the microcosm. She is a macrocosm of the micro. And we are a living system within her ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't heal, we will continue to fight these empty battles in which we will never win, because all that's needed is for us to clean up what it is that we're doing so that she can mirror the health that we have. And that's the biggest lesson that I learned from this burnout is, yeah, you can want to make all that money. Go ahead and do it. But your body will suffer in some way or another. Your relationships will suffer in some way or another. You know, we always talk about this whole work-life balance and how it doesn't exist. It does exist, except you have to give up your place in the hierarchy. You have to give up your greed. You have to give up, you know, surplus, not abundance, excess. You have to give up this extractive nature. You have to reinvest into regeneration. You have to divest from whatever the status quo was telling us. And that takes a lot of, you know, I mean, first it's a choice, but then it's a lot of like, my mind tells me I am losing it every single day. Like you are, you know, how can you leave that job or that status or that thing for this? And I've yet to actually see these philosophies that I'm being shown proven in my own life. So I always feel a bit hesitant to like, you know, advocate and like bring people on board, because I'm like, I'm really, you know, I hope it works out. I can feel in my deepest core that this is the way that we were designed to be, not sick. I went to the hospital the other day.
Yeah.
Just because I'm, you know, dealing with so many different ailments that are coming from this burnout. And I walked out of the elevator and the hospital floor three out of, I don't know, five floors was packed. And I just turned to my husband and I said, this is not normal. They're not giving out anything for free. We have to pay. We're paying to be in this space. And we're all here because there's something wrong with us, that we're sick. That's why we're all packed in here like sardines, waiting for our ticket and our number to be called so that we can see a doctor for 10 minutes who's going to write a prescription instead of saying, you need to put down your phone, you need to drink more water, you need to exercise, you need to meditate, you need to switch jobs, you need to get a new job, you need to stop working and rest for 3 months. It's just, it almost just feels like this endless cycle. And my desire is that the Aquarian entrepreneur identity is kind of a bomb to that. Entrepreneurs that are choosing to do business in a way that's centering new paradigm value systems, in a way that's centering human wellness, in a way that's centering a regenerative earth in every decision that they make. And I know that takes courage because, you know, you're saying no thanks to the dollar and yes, please to so many other things, but I know it's possible. I know with every fiber of my being that it's possible. Mm-hmm.
I love that. Wellness is such an integral part of strong business practice, sustainable business practice. And I recently heard you say something too that stuck with me, which is that human wellness requires human connection. Mm. And I think, I mean, connection to me is part of wellness. It makes us, it's the thing that reminds us that we're alive, that we are capable of like intimacy and love, and we are lovable, and it's affirming without needing language necessarily. It is obviously like the anchor of community, like it is so much. And so I'm wondering if there are moments in your life journey that you felt yourself not getting the connection you needed, and if so, how that affected your wellness and or your ability to be a businesswoman.
Absolutely. 1000%. I don't know any entrepreneur that maybe hasn't struggled with some type of collaboration. It's interesting too, because Aquarius also rules collaborations and those that we collaborate in our collective and in our community. I remember when I was in sixth grade, this is such a vivid memory. And I was friends with the girls that I went to elementary school, and we all kind of, you know, charted off into our sixth grade year in that same school. And I went to a performing arts school in California. I'm born and raised in California, and then kind of raised on the East Coast a little bit too.
What part of California?
I was raised in the Valley in Sherman Oaks, and then middle school around the sixth grade time, we moved to Maryland. So like the DMV area.
Yeah. Familiar with both.
Yeah. That's awesome. And so I went to a performing arts school because I was always into my creative expression. And I just remember walking up to them in PE, and like they all kind of turned their backs on me. I was like, what is going on? And I ended up eating lunch by myself that day. And funnily enough, that week was the week that we were moving to Maryland. So I never kind of got closure as to what happened, or why are we not friends anymore? Or, you know, what in our collaboration of friendship degraded to the point where I was not given some sort of explanation as to why our friendship was no longer there. And I just remember showing up to my next school and being so afraid to make friends because of it. And I so believe that that was a core memory that entrenched itself into how I show up and communicate and collaborate with anyone, There was always this deep fear of rejection that kind of embedded itself, because it was so out of the blue. I never knew why until this day. I still don't know why. You know, I've talked to my therapist about it, my husband and my friend and so many people. And all that I can gather is that there was a part of me that was being myself in sixth grade when everyone else was feeling pressure to not be themselves. I kind of was a late bloomer in terms of innocence. Like I still had a lot of my, you know, quirky fifth grade, 10-year-old, 11-year-old. I don't even know how old you are in sixth grade, but I never really gave in to that kind of peer pressure to change who I was until that event happened. Mm. And it deeply affected me in so many ways. And you know, when we bring it over to business, it never fully allowed me to make decisions that represented my quirkiness. Mm. And I think the Aquarian Entrepreneur is one of these first things that I've created that is really kind of a stand in the ground for, you know, something isn't right here. And if no one's going to say it, I'll say it. And if no one's going to stand for it, I'll stand for it, regardless of if it might seem out of the blue or contrary thinking or something in opposition to what the status quo is. I also am not, it's not a miss on me that the season of kind of getting the Aquarian Entrepreneur off the ground is in direct correlation with this kind of deep healing of my body that I'm going mm-hmm. through right now to kind of release all of these patterns, these old patterns of having to hide certain parts of myself in order to be accepted by my community or by my collective. It's not like anyone ever said those words, but you know how we, you know, how our subconscious mind picks up on the safety of just the minute, the smallest little interactions with someone. You know, oh, they looked at me that way. That must mean they didn't like my hair curly. So now I'm going to straighten my hair every single day so that no one ever thinks anything of my curly hair.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they never said anything about your curly hair. But you picked up on something. Something was there. And so I'm really hoping that this new season in my life, as like I kind of close down everything that was still me, you know, all those business ventures, everything I did, you know, from since graduating college, my bachelor's degree, my master's degree, like they were all still me, but they were very fractioned parts mm-hmm. of me. They weren't whole.
Yeah.
They weren't a whole representation of me because there was always this lingering feeling that if I show all of me, it won't be accepted. So let me test or let me watch other people who have similar traits or who's expressing in a similar way. Okay, they're getting away with it. Okay, now I can go and express in that similar way. You know, it's like
you need confirmation that it's a safe place to be before you can go and be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
goodness.
Yeah.
Yes. No, so much of this is, I want to write an essay on like every sentence on opinion piece, the fractioned parts of me. And I'm like, this is my that you're dropping that are things I'm going to reflect on after. But you talked about the fraction parts of you and knowing with conviction and reverence what you stand for. And I do think that so much of wellness is about holding steadfast to what we stand for. And that means understanding, articulating, and requiring our no's and our yeses. Because when we invite the things in our life that should have been a no, when we say yes to when we say no to the things that we should have made space for, like there becomes this, there's a lot of gray area in our spirit. Mm-hmm. I can attest to how heavy that can feel in like the pit of my stomach when I am operating with a lack of clarity. Mm-hmm. I know it. And then I am upset with myself for saying no to the thing I should have said yes to the thing I should, for having a gate wide open for any and all things to come in. Ooh, just needed to get that out there. But it can take such a time for us to really know ourselves and us to know where we draw these lines. Part of it is the courage to do so, because it means we're going to have to mourn the things we say no to possibly. But part, I think, even before we get to that point, is just knowing ourselves really well. And that can take a long time to build that self-confidence. Yes. And so that's just, I'm affirming everything you said, but also asking you, as I am growing to deeply admire you in this conversation, what do you know unequivocally about yourself that made your decision so clear, your decision making so clear in what you invite and what you don't?
Okay, I want to say something, and I'm trying to find the words. Ever since I was a child, I've always known that my judgment was correct. Mm. And that's a very bold statement to make, you know. But if that's one thing that I know about myself, is that my judgment of a situation, a person, a place, a thing, is always, it's always on. Why? Just like you said, why do I betray that? Because I'm afraid that it's always going to be right. I'm afraid that someone's going to say, you think you know everything. You're not so smart. And I've had all those things said to me. I've had people who you think are your friends or your family members. Who do you think you are? You think you're so smart? You think you're always right? No, I don't think I'm always right. I think I'm always correct. Mm. And those are two different things. Right automatically pulls in all of the thought forms of wrong. Mm. And I'm not judge or jury. I'm not God condemning you or your choices. I'm saying what's correct for me, the correct for my feelings, the correct for my environment, the correct for my experience. And sadly, or maybe not so sadly, I feel like I've brushed up against a lot more experiences that I've had to say no to, or a lot more people that I couldn't let into my life that I think maybe has jaded me in some ways, but I still inherently believe that humans are good. I still inherently believe that as creations and creators, that all we want to do is love and be together and be whole, and all the things, all the good feelings that we are able to feel. Hopefully you feel them at least once a day, but that my judgment is always correct, and that I cannot be afraid of that judgment, because every time I deny it, I reject myself, and something always happens. Something always happens that just says, why do you continue to deny yourself? Why do you continue to disrespect yourself? And I think that was the fire that came through my last podcast episode, is because I'm just sick and tired of disrespecting what I know to be correct for myself. And you know who mirrors it? Everyone else. Everyone else mirrors my disrespect back to me. Not because they actually want to disrespect me, but because they see that I am a person that can be disrespected, whether it's emotionally disrespected, verbally, physically, in my work, in my pay, in how I show up, even in the tiniest ways. I feel like we're antennas of the divine. So we're picking up on things that are so unsaid, you know, just the way that we show up, the prices that we price our things at. Someone can look at it and say, wow, that person is deeply disrespectful of themselves, and I'm going to take full advantage of this. And they will, and they do. It's very rare that I've had someone say, you need to raise your prices, or I feel like I've gotten way more than maybe you've given me. Or have you ever thought of maybe putting in? I remember I had a client just recently come in, and she said, you know, I find it really odd that you're so accessible. I wonder why I didn't have to apply in order to work with you. And I said, I've never even heard of that. She said, yeah, because no one's going to want to tell you that. Like, they're going to want to have access to you. They're going to want to take advantage of your time, of your space, of your essence. They're going to want to drain you for all the energy that you have. But something about this doesn't feel right. Something about this doesn't feel correct for you. And I have had that thought that she had given me so many times. But then my mind comes and says, you're so bougie. Who do you think you are making people apply to work with you? Like, no one's going to do that. You're going to miss out on clients doing that. All the type of rumblings and thunder and lightning that go on in our minds, even though we know that our judgment is correct. And I'm not the only one that has correct judgment. We all have correct judgment. We all have correct discernment. It's something that needs to be cultivated over time through experience, but it's absolutely there. It's not some gift that only a few have. Everyone has it. Because that's the GPS that allows us to navigate, you know, all of the dimensions of this one earth. So that's something that I have grief for not always listening to that. I have sadness. I have a deep sadness, to be honest, that I'm hoping to one day compost into something that, mm-hmm. you know, can feel a lot more fruitful mm-hmm. in the complete respect for everything that I am and the multidimensionality that I am. And I think that would actually inspire other people to respect themselves more and say, you know, I'm a writer, but I also do this and I also paint and I also want you to see me in this way. Because we're more than one job or one thing or one presenting way. And I think as we move into the Aquarian age of, you know, we're starting to see there's more than one gender, more than two genders, more than three genders. There's more than one kind of way of being culturally defined, you know? Our minds and our perspectives are widening to appreciate more of our divinity inside of this human experience. But it does take that cultivating of that courage to come out and say, yes, I know you knew me at this price, or yes, I know you knew me at this look or at this stage, but I've since allowed myself to express more of what was underneath. But it's a journey. I'm sure you know that. I'm sure you've already experienced all that.
Oh my goodness. Like, I'm here like, oh. I like, for anyone who's not watching, I literally like had my head, like, yeah, it's so interesting. I have betrayed so many times what I knew in my intuitive. So many times. So many times.
And it's so painful.
Yeah. 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 And I don't know that I would have found the language to say I always knew my judgment was correct, but I know with certainty I always had a broader perspective than the very specific context would allow.
Yes.
I feel like I'm speaking in nuanced language, and if you know, you know. mm-hmm. But I've always known, because I have lived in so many environments amongst so many different kinds of people, like you say, so many backgrounds, that I always like was confident that knowing that learning through life experiences was bringing me into situations with a deeper and broader perspective. And even if I didn't know what was correct for me, I knew that there were so many things to be considered, you know, from my lens, from their lens, from a neutral lens, from godly lens. Like, there's so many perspectives to be considered. And I always try to like assess and judge based on challenging myself to not look at situations in one dimensional way. That probably like is where my wisdom comes from, but also where my confusion came from.
Yes.
There's so much. So I would probably like overweight on the things that I shouldn't have been considering, but in just knowing that there are many truths to a story and to a situation, I've just always tried to be encompassing and inclusive of like, there's perspective on this, and perspective to me is where like my intellect comes from.
What you just described is empathy, though.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the it's a gift and a curse, you know. Mm-hmm. You overweight on other people's the impact on other people, the perspective of other people. A lot of like over forgiving
that
with empathy. And so, but I'm like going to write this, what you said, everyone mirrors my disrespect to myself. And I would say that the life I serve is a compost. I would never have like, that is the perfect word. And one of my sixth grade experiences, I did a lot of composting. Like odd, but for my science projects, I would take a lot of like junk and leftover vegetables and fruit, and I would have different compost in our front yard made of different things. That was like my science experiment for a couple years and middle school. So I love the word compost because it really is like taking all of the things, putting it together, and like it makes something else.
Right.
And so my book, I'm gonna get you a copy, but the last part of it is about self-trust. Last part of it is about how do we tap into what we know. Like, we all, like you said, have this wisdom, and some of us are equipped to flex it and use a muscle to demonstrate it, and some of us, you know, it's a journey with ourselves over time. I have two more questions for you. One, you know, as I hear you speak, I hear discipline and discipline and the yes and the no. The discipline is just in knowing ourselves well and reflecting what we know in the decisions we make and allowing that to be our legacy. And even though we don't know, we may not have legacy top of mind as we're moving through life, we are living legacies, you know, and I mean, legacies is usually meant for those who have passed and what they've left behind, but we are like, our breadcrumbs are being like drone through life, through all of the people that we connect with, and it becomes an anchor for us and for them. And I'm just wondering, as a, you are global, you are dynamic, you are multifaceted, multidimensional, very intersectional person and woman, Black woman, who has experienced a lot of kind of transient movement in your life. How in your transientness, and you feel like you're evolving through business and through interests and through, like, as you're learning yourself, but what would you say is like the pillar, no matter what season of your life you're in, whether it is in business ventures or in family or in, you know, just world exploration, like, what are your pillars?
I'm closing my eyes so I can really like taste this. I think my first one is stillness. I think that's one of the reasons why I'm sick right now, is because I broke that rule. Stillness. I love that you used the word discipline. It's funny. That's the word that a lot of people describe me as, and I always think it's so funny. I'm like, really? You think I'm disciplined? But a few years ago, I was very much into dictionaries, and I told my husband, like, buy me a dictionary and a thesaurus for my birthday. And I would just look at different words and try to understand the etymology of different words. And discipline actually comes from the word discipleship. And it means to be in devotion to one's teachings, to one's truth. And that's why Jesus called them the 12 disciples. They weren't in devotion to him. They were in devotion to their own truth. And they were working to be in discipline to what the truths were that they were finding. And as we know, they spent a lot of time in quiet and in stillness, because that was one of the main ways that they were able to cultivate that devotion and that discipline. So stillness, to me, is number one. I think the second one would be fantasy. I really like, obviously, you know, authors like Octavia Butler, who are able to stand at that transient in their identity and merge different worlds and build different worlds. I really admire world builders of any kind, imagination or physical. I feel like those are the people that are really listening. The people that can build worlds means that they've already been to somewhere else. And they really inspire me. So fantasy, beauty, but beauty in the way that that lasts, like legacy beauty. Yes, I love beautiful things, but things that stand and withstand the test of time. And that's why legacy is one of just my main words. And every decision that I make is always, do I want this to be part of my legacy? That's something I always ask. Do I want this to be part of my legacy? Do I want to be remembered in this way? Do I want to be remembered as this decision or with this choice, or that I hung out with these people, or that I said those things? And, you know, obviously, we're not perfect, but it's always, 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 always top of mind. So I think that's four. But the last one that I'll go with is aspiration. I recently learned the difference between ambition and aspiration. And it's such a slight pivot, mm-hmm. because most people are like, oh, that's so amazing. You're so ambitious. You know, mm-hmm. you're so like climbing your way to the top. But ambition really kind of bulldozes its way, whereas aspiration allows itself to enter, re-enter, move in and out of different spaces, because it never is fully, it's not chasing anything. It's mm-hmm. just grateful to be within and to be around. Whereas ambition is like, I have a dead center goal and I'm gonna get to it. And so aspiration to me just felt like an elevated experience of, you know, yeah, go after your goals. And also realize that your goals are not you, that something else may come on the path and inspire you. And maybe you want to move in that direction and let that be okay. So as I say those things, I'm like, oh, okay. I probably thought about this before. Yeah. So thank you for asking that.
Yeah. No, thank you for all of this. I'm full. My cup is full.
Me too.
Thank you for listening to Life I Swear. You can follow Life I Swear on Instagram and learn more at lifeiswear.com. The book, Life I Swear, Intimate Stories from Black Women on Identity, Healing, and Self-Trust, is available for purchase. And if you haven't yet, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcast fix. I hope you join me next week for another episode. In the meantime, be well.